You are listening to the Brighton Book Club, a monthly show about books and writing in Brighton and beyond. This month's show is dedicated to The Coast is Queer, a festival of talks, books, spoken word and ideas from an LGBTQ plus perspective. It runs at the Attenborough Centre for the Creative Arts at the Sussex campus in Brighton from October the 12th to the 15th, 2023. The Coast is Queer brings together an exciting lineup of nationally and internationally acclaimed queer writers, poets, performers, and activists in a three-day festival of accessible, lively, in-conversation events, workshops, films, and discussions celebrating LGBTQ plus lives and writing. It is stimulating, surprising, frequently very funny, and often provocative, inviting audiences to dive into fresh perspectives on subjects from lived experiences of mental health, LGBTQ plus lives in Ukraine, to bisexuality and hidden queer identities. There is also spoken word, cabaret, and of course, dancing. Students from the University of Sussex and the University of Brighton are selecting the contributors for the opening day, including YouTuber and influencer Jamie Rains, with a panel celebrating often unspoken gender identities, sexualities and attraction styles. Additionally, a programme of short queer films curated by the BFI will run throughout the weekend. Highlights of the festival include, on Thursday the 12th of October, best-selling novelist, screenwriter, journalist and columnist Juno Dawson returns to The Coast is Queer with more inspiring, joyful conversation with some of our best trans writers. This year, Juno will be joined by writer, campaigner and author of A Trans Man Walks Into a Gay Bar, Harry Nicholas. On Friday the 13th of October, The Coast is Queer is showcasing some of Brighton's very best queer voices at an inclusive open mic event that welcomes anybody who feels inspired by the theme Rewriting Queerness. The event will be hosted by Fuchsia Von Steele and poets Rihanna Valentine, Aflo the Poet and Pris Nash will share their work alongside participants from the audience. So is that you? Come along on the day and sign up to be on stage reading your poetry in front of a really lively, wonderful audience. You can hear more about the student-curated events later in the show. On Sunday the 15th of October, a panel discussion will ask what it means to be a queer writer in a time of war, when being visibly queer in your own country is an act of rebellion in itself. How are queer Ukrainian writers telling their stories against all odds, creating new work beyond all constraint from inside and outside their war-torn country? You can hear from panelists and author of this month's book club book, Yelena Moscovich, later in the show. So on the show, we hear from Leslie Wood, CEO of New Writing South and director of the festival, from David Shepherd, who heads up Marlborough Productions, who is a partner of the festival, from Aleska Ruxoff, one of the student curators behind Friday's event, from Okay Nzelu, who joins us to talk about his In Conversation event with Max Lobe on the Saturday and the workshop he's running on character. We also speak to author of this month's book club book, Yelena Moscovich, who is coming all the way from Paris to appear on the Queer Ukraine panel, as I said. It is a jam-packed lineup and a jam-packed show, full of great book recommendations and inspiring conversations about queer literature. You can see the full lineup and get your hands on tickets either for the whole weekend, for whole days, or individual events at thecoastisqueer.com. I really hope you enjoy the show. The Coast is Queer Festival is back in 2023 from the 12th to the 15th of October, and I am joined by the director of the festival, Leslie Wood, to tell us about it more. Leslie, welcome to the Brighton Book Club.
Thank you.
What is The Coast is Queer?
Yeah. So The Coast is Queer is the largest LGBTQ plus literature festival in the UK. It's run by New Writing South and with Marlborough Productions from Brighton, and also with our two universities, Brighton and Sussex University. This is the fourth year that we've run, and we've got some really fantastic events. We're really proud of this year's, well, we're proud every year, but we're really pleased with the lineup that we've got for you this year.
So who can we look forward to seeing?
Right, so much, so much. So Juno Dawson is back with her lovely trans literary salon, and she'll be talking to writer and campaigner Harry Nicholas. Joelle Taylor will be talking about The Undercurrent of Class, on Queer Lives with Natasha Carfew, and she'll also be doing a fantastic performance. Well, I hope it's a fantastic performance, but it will be, from Canto. We have a cabaret, we've got an open mic evening, we have workshops, performances, panels and talks. There'll also be screenings of, I think it's 8 really fantastic short films by queer filmmakers from the BFI. We're excited that we have had students from Sussex and Brighton Universities curating the events on Friday of the festival. And so that will include a panel discussion about why we're queer when we're not having sex. And that's featuring YouTuber Jamie Rains with poet Rebecca Burgess and author of Bisexual Men Exist, Vanik Mehta. Look, there's so much more. We've also got international writers. Max Lobe is going to be here from Geneva, and Yelena Moscovich. And she'll be joining other LGBT Ukrainian writers who are living in exile. And they're sort of calling for solidarity in a time of war when the queer community is really so much more vulnerable to persecution. And I think that will be a really fascinating and enlightening session on the Sunday.
You can hear Yelena Moscovich talk about her book, which is this month's book club book, Nadiza in the Dark, later in the show. Thank you very much, Leslie, for joining us. How can we buy tickets to the Coasters Queer Festival?
Go to the website, which is www.coastersqueer.com. The festival will be on at the Attenborough Centre on Sussex University campus. It's a fantastic venue for the festival because there are so many different studio spaces and workshop spaces. There's a cafe, there's an outside area, and it is going to be sunny all weekend, so that will be fantastic. And we've also got a bookstall that's going to be run by Camp Town Books, so all the authors will be doing signings, etc., and there's plenty of space for that there in the Attenborough Centre as well. So yeah, just go to the website and book. People can book either individual tickets for events or their a weekend or day pass, well, festival or day pass is available as well. And but honestly, there's so much going on that you could arrive at 11 o'clock in the morning and go home at midnight and not have had a second of boredom.
David Shepherd is the Executive Director of Marlborough Productions, who have partnered with the Coasters Queer Festival. David, welcome to the Brighton Book Club. Can you tell us a bit about Marlborough Productions?
Thanks for having me, first off. And Marlborough Productions is a catalyst for queer culture and community. And what I mean by that highfalutin term is that we basically work with communities and artists to make queer culture happen. And it takes lots of different forms. We do kind of festivals, we do theatre shows, history projects, community development things, all kinds of stuff, but it's all bound together within this sort of queer approach.
So why do the Coasters Queer appeal as a kind of good partner to collaborate with?
Well, we love working with New Writing South, first off. And Leslie Wood, who runs New Writing South, was one of our great early supporters of Marlborough Productions' work. And we think she's amazing. And I guess one of the main reasons and what kind of sparked the partnership is that I love reading and I love writing. I have a writing practice of my own. And I suppose it feels like that writing is just such an important aspect of queer life and our community's identity in the way that we express ourselves and are understood. And it binds together all different things, whether it's, you know, the diary of Anne Lister, or whether it's a stage play that Neil Bartlett has written, or whether it's a poem by Travis Alabanza. It just feels like it's just a central kind of core part of our cultural expression. And I was really excited to see what Coasters Queer could do to showcase interesting queer radical writing practices.
You have had a part in putting together the Queer Histories event on the Sunday afternoon. Can you talk a bit about this one?
Yeah, well, we're just really excited to get these amazing people together. Matt Cook, Alison Tofa, Stephen Bourne, like they just feel like they're just doing really pioneering work in queer histories. And I think it's just going to be an exciting conversation. Love Tofa and what the work that he's done with Ruckus Collection, and really kind of pushing at the boundaries of what an archive can be and do. And Matt has obviously become the first professor of queer history in the UK. And I think it's just a really interesting opportunity to just see people who are kind of leading in their field bounce off each other and get excited and discuss things. So I'd highly recommend coming to our History Club events. We're really proud of all of them. They seem to attract this very interesting intergenerational mix of people. And yeah, just always a really good vibe.
And the Marlborough Productions have also put together Saturday Night's Cabaret Show. What can we expect from this? I'm very excited about this, by the way.
Well, we've got lots of naughty kids coming, and that's what I feel excited about. It's like dynamic, rebellious performers like Liv Winter, who I followed for quite a long time online, and just does really badassy, great work and projects. And Felix Mufti, who I just think has got a truly unique voice in our community and just done fantastic things like Sex Education, the series that's just about to come out, and Erin James, who's like Stuart Hall fellow, local brilliant performer, and they've just got something cutting edge to say about queer life now, and it's all going to be soundtracked by Wild Blood and Queenie, who are legends of our nightlife, our queer nightlife. So I'm excited about just getting those people together.
Fabulous. So you can buy individual tickets to both the history event and the cabaret event, or they are included in your day tickets for the Saturday and the Sunday, and your festival pass if you have one for the whole weekend, which I highly recommend you do. It's an absolute bargain. So, David, what are Marlborough Productions doing at the moment that we should know about?
Well, lots of things. So we've got some other performances that are going to be happening at ACCA later in the year. So we have Prance of the Dancer, which is a show that we've made for children, that's going to be on in December. We've got a performance that's just to be announced this week, which I probably can't talk about yet. And then we've also got our monthly history clubs that take place at the museum, which are going to be happening at the end of October and the end of November. We've got some fab speakers lined up for those. And lots to look forward to for next year. Some brilliant projects in the offing, hopefully coming to Brighton soon.
So if anyone is listening to the show today and they're on the fence about coming down to the Coasters Queer, or don't feel like it's their place if they're not part of the queer community, what would you say to them?
I would say, get curious, get interested. We're all the same. We're all driven by desire, by a need for connection, whether you're queer or not. You can learn a lot. You can teach someone something. You can exchange and be part of it. And we're a friendly bunch. So just come and be part of it. I think what I think is so exciting about the festival is there are just some perspectives that you're just not going to see showcased very much elsewhere. So there's just a great opportunity to like learn and grow as people and as a community. And that's the kind of thing that I like to go to.
So this is the Brighton Book Club, and it would be remiss of me not to talk just a little bit more about books. So what was the last really great novel that you read that you can recommend to our listeners?
Why is you asking me this question? Because I always forget as soon as anyone asks me this thing, and I'm constantly reading a book. The book that I'm going to talk about is in the programme, actually, which is the Mark Hyatt book, Love Later. Knew that it was coming in the program, picked it up, didn't have particular expectations of it, and it just provides such like a vivid insight into 1960s England and being a queer person in that space. And it's just like a weird time capsule, and it's of this written by this queer Romany writer that unfortunately died by suicide, and it's just an extraordinary document of a time that you just don't really, I'd had no conception of. And that's one of my favorite experiences when reading a book. I'm just like, wow, that's not something I had thought about. And I think especially with kind of historical things, it's so rarely the central focus. You might get a queer character that kind of comes in on the side or has a kind of like peripheral role in something. And actually this is just like a first person, amazing, fluent account of a life, a strange, twisted, emotional, sad, sexual, rich life.
So the event that you mentioned, David, is called True Homosexual Love, Mark Hyatt, and that is on the 13th of October at 6:30 p.m. in the Attenborough Centre for Arts Auditorium. And that is a panel event with Sam Ladkin, Luke Roberts, Fran Locke and So Mayer, and to talk about the work, as David said, of Bohemian 1960s poet Mark Hyatt. David, thank you so much for coming on the Brighton Book Club. How can we find and follow Marlborough Productions and keep abreast of what you're up to?
Well, you should visit marlboroughproductions.org.uk. You can find us on all social media platforms, Marlborough, so just look for Marlborough Productions and join our mailing list.
Thank you very much. Alexa Rusikoff is one of the student curators behind Friday's events at the Coast is Queer Festival. And I'm delighted to be joined by Alexa to talk about the lineup that they have put together. Alexa, welcome to the Brighton Book Club.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be here.
So what appealed to you about working on the Coast is Queer project?
Gosh, so many things. I'm a student curator, so I'm currently a student at the University of Brighton, and the student day is a combination of students from Brighton and Sussex. So as a lit student, it really appealed to me to get involved in something that involves people from publishing and people who are creatives and all sorts of different things like that that I'd never done before. So that was one of the big draws. But also I'd been, as part of my course timetable to the Coast is Queer 2022, thought it was absolutely amazing, had the opportunity to sign up to it, and I'm so glad I did.
Have you enjoyed the process? What's kind of like really stood out to you as something you've learned from doing it?
One thing that was definitely new that I've learned is how to send a lot of important emails. Before, I had very little experience in contacting people to put an event together. I had very little experience in how to contact the management of creative people, and that's something that I definitely have learned a lot about, hunting down the right email to use, finding where people can be contacted online, was definitely a new experience for me.
Yes, absolutely. One thing with curating events is there's a lot of emails going out and not enough coming in. I always find that I'm just doing a lot of chasing.
Yeah, a bit of an imbalance, but it's always so satisfying when you finally get an answer, so it's still a good part of my experience.
Absolutely. So let's talk about these events that you and the student curating team have put together. So on Friday the 13th of October at 1 o'clock, we have a workshop celebrating queerness with R Magazine. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so excited that that's our first event, one of three that we've put on for this. So the workshop is celebrating queerness with our zine with Nuria and Em the Moog, who have put together some really cool stuff. And essentially, it's going to be a kind of exploration of the process of zine making as an accessible tool to kind of unleash our creativity and celebrate queerness, take charge of our own narratives. So I have had to learn a lot about what zines are. So just for anyone who might not know, it's usually a booklet or a pamphlet form that's very low cost to produce and often non-commercial. It's self-published and it can include photos, drawings, poems, essays, single themes, collaborative works. And there's loads of places in Brighton where you can actually pick up zines. So it's very Brighton based to be having our zine, who's producing out of Brighton, and such kind of a piece that is all around the city to be the first thing that we do for the student created day.
Absolutely. And if you want to look up R Magazine, that is spelled A-G-H-H exclamation mark, and they are on Instagram. So at 3 p.m. you guys have put together a panel called Invisible Identities: Why We're Queer When We're Not Having Sex. What is going on with this event?
This is really exciting. So this panel, all the student curators kind of, we had a lot of roundtable discussions on what we thought would be really interesting to put together for a panel. So with our zine, it's going to be a workshop, so people who attend will be able to do some creation themselves. But this one is a panel format with some really exciting people. So we've got Rebecca Burgess, Jamie Rains, and Vineet Mehta, who have all created some form of handbook or guidebook literature for the LGBT plus community. So either the word handbook or the phrase how to is in the title. And that is really unique. Why do we have handbooks in 2023? Why do they have a place on our shelves? And what kind of support are they offering to the community? And why did these people decide now was the time to write them? That's kind of the questions that we're going to be asking, and hopefully have a discussion around how literature, that specifically how to, can influence us, can support us, and where we stand with it.
That sounds absolutely incredible. I cannot wait for that one. So last but not least, you have put together an open mic event, which will take part at 8:30 on Friday the 13th. And this features some great poets to kick it off. We've got Aflo the Poet, Rihanna Valentine and Priest Nash. And it's hosted by the wonderful Fuchsia Von Steele. Tell us about this open mic.
Yeah, this is going to be a really exciting way to end the student events that we've put together for the festival. So we want this to be a pressure-free opportunity for people to get involved and share their own poetry, share their own work around the theme of rewriting queerness. So we would really love it if people would sign up on the day. There'll be a clipboard around to put your name down. And we do have the headliners to kind of set the theme for us of rewriting queerness. So when we say that, we've got one headliner who is openly neurodiverse. We would really like to create an intersectional theme. So if you have something that you feel contributes to your own experience of queerness, we would love you to stand up and talk about that. But kind of looking around LGBTQIA+, what's already been written, and then contribute your own, build upon it, and share what you think needs to be shared in 2023. That was kind of our idea there. So we really hope it's going to be a great ending.
Absolutely, and such a great opportunity for people who would like a really safe space to be able to share their work, especially from the LGBTQ plus community. So, Alexa, what are you excited to see over the weekend that's not a student curated event?
If everything was an answer, I would give that, but I would probably say, I mean, there's so many events going on, but just off the top of my head, I know that there's going to be a BFI event as well with some focus around queer filmmaking, which is going to be playing throughout the festival. So I'm definitely looking forward to putting my head through and just having a look at that. But I also know that some really amazing people like Juno Dawson, Joel Taylor are going to be speaking, and there's events for young people as well. So I'm kind of looking forward just to taking it all in this time rather than just the one event I went to last year.
The panelists for Why We're Queer, Where We're Not Having Sex have all written books, as you said. And as you were chairing the panel, you have just read them. What really can you recommend about these books to the queer community?
Each one of them has something really unique to offer. So Rebecca Burgess has written her memoir in a graphic format. So it's a graphic novel, which is really entertaining. And some people, including myself, I can actually read a lot faster when things are written graphically. So if you're into graphic novels, that's definitely a really great one to pick up. Jamie Raines's book, The T in LGBT Plus, Everything You Need to Know About Being Trans, is a really amazing handbook that's done with a lot of support from the community. So as you read it, there are a lot of input from other trans people in the community. And then Vineet Mehta's book, Bisexual Men Exist, is really amazing because it's got this academic spin to it where there's a lot of citation, which is really insightful. And I've learned so much from reading that book as well. But they're all fantastic. And I really hope that anybody who has the time will come along and see the panel.
Alexa, thank you so much for coming on to talk about the student curated events at the Coasters Queer Festival. And you can get your tickets to the events that Alexa and her team have put together, as well as all the other events at coasterskweer.com.
Okay, Chukwu Nzelu is a Manchester-based writer. In 2015, he was the recipient of a Northern Writers Award from New Writing North. His debut novel, The Private Joys of Nenna Maloney, won a Betty Trask Award. It was also shortlisted for the Desmond Elliott Prize and the Polari First Book Prize, and it was longlisted for the Portico Prize. In 2021, it was selected for the Kingston University Big Read. His second novel, Here Again Now, was shortlisted for the Royal Society of Literature Encore Award and longlisted for the Polari Prize, the Jalik Prize and the Diverse Book Awards. Okay, welcome to the Brighton Book Club.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You are coming back to the Coasters Queer this year after coming last year to talk about Here Again Now. What is it that you like about the Coasters Queer Festival and why is it important?
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad to be back. I loved being there last time because it just feels like this whole community of queer writers of all experiences and lots of different styles and forms of writing just descend on Brighton. And you're just surrounded by so many creative people with so many ideas, There's interesting discussions going on wherever you turn, whether that's on stage at an event, or whether that's just behind the scenes, or you're just bumping into people in the cafe at the centre. It's a really fantastic time.
So Here Again Now has been described as a beautiful exploration of grief and family, masculinity and love. Can you tell us a bit about this book, please?
Yeah, thank you. So Here Again Now is my second novel. It's a novel about three Black British men living in London. Two of them, Akene and Achike, are in their sort of 30s, and they've always had a will they, won't they relationship with each other. They've been friends for a long time, but they've never quite pushed, I guess, taken it to the next level, even though they have really strong feelings for one another. And then the third character is Achike's father, Chibike, who is complicated in his own way. He's an alcoholic. He has regrets about life, about how he treated his wife when she was alive, his son's mother, how he's treated his son as a gay man, how he himself lives as a man who has, you know, this huge inner emotional life, but doesn't really know how to express himself and feels afraid to. So the novel is about what happens when one of those three men is torn away from the others in an event which I will not reveal. And the novel leaves the other two to find their way with one another and to figure out what love looks like in a surprising context. I was really proud to write this book. I think it really touches on so many subject matter sort of topics that are really close to my heart. It's about masculinity and queerness, yes, but it's also about love and what life can look like when the unexpected happens and where you go from there.
That was such a beautiful pitch for your book. I often ask authors kind of what their books are about, and that was a particularly gorgeous answer. Thank you so much, OK.
Thank you.
Can you read us a little extract after whetting our appetites?
Oh, thank you. I'd love to. So I'm going to read right from the beginning of the novel concerning the two younger characters that I spoke about a moment ago. Achike is a very successful actor. He's just flying back. He's just flown back from filming his latest film, and he's about to get back to his flat in Peckham in London, where he is currently sharing with Akene. Akene always heard the music first. Achike gave him something different every time. Some days, Akene would open the front door and there would be Samuel Coleridge Taylor before him in Achike's hands. There might be Elgar or Chopin, things Achike had taught himself, heard somewhere and reined in to his own keen fingers. Reined in to himself and then played out, wild again, like the first time it was ever played. Or he might come home early from filming, and Akene would walk across the courtyard to an improvisation on something by Frank Ocean, something Achike had listened to on the way home, something that made Akene think of fresh air and cool evenings after long, hot days. Something of this was for Achike himself. He worked too hard these days, and he loved to leave hard work and bother behind. He loved to step off the tube and go, step by step, to his home, and close the front door and hear the busy world continue just outside. He loved this feeling of safety, and so some of the pleasure in his music was for him. But what he did was not for him alone. His music was like offering joy. All his training and listening and the hours of practice were like joy, plated up and pushed across a table to a smile. Achike loved to play and think how his playing could be heard in the street. He didn't care if the neighbours had questions or might complain in the morning. They might, and sometimes did. That was for them. But Achike, he might make Akene happy with a song. He might take music that had been two pieces and make them one. He might loop them both together and play them out to please Akene. Two favourite things of his, noticed and known and offered. Or he might fly into Heathrow a week late, cursing the director all the way home, and let himself into the flat at 1 a.m, tiptoeing in so that Akene woke to the sound of him, humming a new piece of his own making, woke to the sound of some creation pouring into his ear as though Achike were feeding him a dream. And how he fed him. Akene often dreamed about Achike when he was gone. He was gone too much. Akene always thought to be happy for his friend in his success and to think of him doing great things, but sometimes it was hard. When it was hard for him, He thought about the way good light might hit Achike's face in some perfect scene, or how Achike might inspire someone to write some new thing charged with beauty, or perhaps only to change a scene, knowing it could be better with Achike in it. Sometimes it was enough just to think of Achike, to think of him smiling in good light. Ekene was rewarded for his faith. He would wait for Achike as long as he could, but the trains were late and filming ran on, and he sometimes fell asleep before Achike arrived at the big flat with its large windows for the fresh, cold light of the day. Ekene slept and dreamed of his great friend in the world, and of his friend coming near while the world kept its distance just outside. And sometimes, after dreaming, he woke to find Achike next to him in bed, barely awake, still singing under his breath. Had he sung all night in readiness?
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. Okay, that was absolutely beautiful and completely transportive. Your writing is stunning. So I clearly had a strong reaction to that. And my next thing is to ask you what the reaction has been like, because this book has been out for over a year now.
Yeah, so the book came out in March 2022, which feels like a lifetime ago now, because I've been able to do so much and sort of talk to people about it for a long time now. And I've had some lovely reactions, like, as you sort of mentioned, it was nominated for the Encore Award from the Royal Society of Literature and a couple of other things. And I've had some lovely messages, actually, on social media from people all over the world who have said all sorts of things, whether that's allowing them to open up to other people in their lives, perhaps have conversations with their own fathers in ways that they weren't expecting to, or people who have had to kind of put the book down at one point because there is something quite big that happens that I think comes as a shock to a lot of readers. And it's been wonderful to be able to connect with people in that way. It's what I want to do the writing for. You know, I want to sort of, I want to sort of touch people's lives in the way that books have touched mine. So, yeah.
So on Saturday, the 14th of October at 3 p.m., you are in conversation with Max Lobe, who is flying in from Geneva for an event called Crossing Boundaries and Borders in Queer Literature. What can we expect from this event?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I will be speaking to Max about his new book, Does Snow Turn a Person White Inside?, which is a really fascinating emotional roller coaster of a journey of a young Black man who is dealing with all sorts of things in terms of work and money and family. And it is a really emotionally involving book. So I'm really excited for us to talk about his work, for us to talk about mine a little bit as well. And I think we'll have a great conversation.
And before this, at 12 o'clock on Saturday the 14th, you are running a workshop called Making a Start with Character. So I'd love to know what you'll be covering in this session and what your top tips are for character creation.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this workshop. I love talking about character because often character is where everything comes from. Sometimes it's, you know, the starting point for a writer instead of plot, for example, or setting. It's about what makes your characters tick. What are your characters rooting for? What are they afraid of? And I'm really looking forward to exploring different ways into that. I think what can be great about this kind of workshop is that, you know, yes, we are making these characters up in our heads, but also they can surprise us, and we can surprise ourselves when we think of things that they might do, when we realize where they're going. And once you've got that, often the story just comes quite naturally from there. So I'm really excited about that. And I suppose my top tip for character would be get to know your characters really well. Everybody has different ways of doing this. So some people will map everything out on a spreadsheet. I've been known to do that myself. I find that helpful. But some people prefer to just create a fact file by hand. Some people just keep a notebook. Whatever you prefer, whatever works for you, you do that. Some people I know use kind of Pinterest, or I've also been using Freeform on my iPad to kind of grab photos and things from the internet to kind of create a mood board with lots of written scribbled notes all around it. I think the most important thing is that you know your characters really, really well, and that takes time. So give yourself time to do that and let ideas unfurl, let things surprise you, as I've said, let things come to you, and make room for your characters to change in your mind as well. That's really important.
That is great advice. Thank you so much. So before you go, I would love to have some book recommendations. What would you suggest that our listeners get on their to-be-read piles?
So I've actually been interviewing recently Derek Owusu about his latest novel, Losing the Plot, which is fantastic. It's a book about the narrator's mother, who's come to this country from Ghana, and imagining her before she had any children, what her life was like before she was a mother. It's really moving, very tender. I've also been reading Promising Young Women by Caroline O'Donoghue, which is not connected to the film of a similar name, although they are both fantastic. Promising Young Women is a really funny sort of coming of age story, really, about a young woman who's kind of lost in terms of her relationship and kind of figuring out work as well and her friendships. Everything's kind of changing all the time. But it's really funny, really sensitive, great read.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And finally, how can we find and follow you and keep abreast of what you are up to and writing?
So I'm on Twitter. Well, sorry, I'm on X, I should say, and Instagram as at Nzelu Writes. So that's my surname, N-Z-E-L-U Writes. You can also find me on my website, nzelu.org, N-Z-E-L-U.org. And I list events and things there and news as well.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our book club book this month is Nadezhda in the Dark, a queer anthem for doomed youth by the author of Virtuoso and A Door Behind a Door. In the dark, two women sit side by side in a Berlin bedsit. Both fled the Soviet Union as children, the unnamed narrator from Ukraine and her girlfriend Nadezhda from Russia. A thigh shifts, fingers fold in, a shoulder is lowered. It is the longest night of the year. Neither speak. The silence between them is filled with the weight of their relationship, told through hidden messages from Russian pop music, the raids of Moscow clubs, and the death of their friend Pasha. Decades resurface, from the era of Stalin to the silver age of the Soviet poets. As the requiem inside the narrator's head expands within the darkness of the room, she asks the all-important question, what does it mean to have hope? Yelena, welcome to the Brighton Book Club.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Well, I'm a writer, and I guess to sum myself up, I'll use my own Twitter tagline, which is I'm devoted to the wilderness of the page and its multilingual disobedience.
Wow. Well, what a lovely introduction. So we are here to talk about your exquisite latest book. First, I'd love to talk about your previous books, if you could tell us a bit about them.
Sure. So, I think maybe to introduce all of them. So I have three books, and what all of them have in common, and also Nadezhda in the Dark, is these themes of immigration as a kind of death, passageways between the daily moment and eternity, and violence, poetry, isolation, the strangeness of having a body. So I think the Natasha starts off, that's my debut book, about, you know, the relationship between our own body and, you know, that whatever is outside of the body, and then also various containers that we hold and inhabit that can be symbolic or concrete. So there's a line in the Natasha's early on, which is there are people who leave their bodies and their bodies go on living without them. These people are called Natasha. So there's a lot of different realities and dimensions that are traversed through the Natashas, as through my second book, Virtuoso, as through my third book, A Door Behind the Door. They're a lot more, I guess, surreal. A lot of them, I think all of them are compared to David Lynch, or even kind of Clarice Lispector, with this sort of the oddity of seemingly banal things.
So what inspired Nadezhda in the Dark? When did the idea come to you, and how did it kind of follow on from your previous books?
Sure. Yeah. So I think it's a book that's been, you know, long in progress, probably in my subconsciousness. But When the war started in Ukraine, it sort of put a spotlight on a part of the world that had been hidden for centuries geopolitically, but, you know, in the geopolitical consciousness. But also for me in my personal life, having left Ukraine at the age of 7, having experienced a trajectory that a lot of immigrants can relate to, which is this need for assimilation as a sort of form of survival. So I, in a sense, I sort of separated or abandoned this Ukrainian part of myself to be able to exist in this sort of American part of myself. And then all of a sudden, this, you know, the dissonance between these two parts that were separated kind of came together when I was seeing this, you know, the nonstop footage of the refugees. Having myself been a refugee, but a Jewish refugee at a completely, you know, a completely different diaspora. So I don't want to compare the two necessarily, but it really brought up these, you know, the feelings of just blankness and being kind of outside of, you know, even geopolitical time, being a bit antiquated in a sense, and yet being so young. And so this coincided with a relationship that I was having with a woman who also immigrated at the same time from the Soviet Union, but from Russia to Berlin. And the war and the relationship, as they kind of developed together, it really warped our personal sense of intimacy within the relationship and created this sort of quickened, I guess, attachment, connection, and also desperation, and this, you know, need to hold on to each other almost in a way of like superstition, in a way to like keep the worlds, you know, glued together. And that was sort of the origin of the book that ended up I wrote it in this, you know, kind of haste of 3 months, which was in part due to the severe, not severe, I mean, it was a very ambitious, I would say, deadline. But also, I think because it had been there for so long, when it came out, it just came out quite quickly.
That's fascinating. I'm sure any writers listening to this will be quaking in their boots thinking, yeah, a novel in 3 months. So I'd love to talk a bit about the experimental form. Your writing mm-hmm. is very beautiful, often surreal, and mm-hmm. often also experimental. What is it for you about subverting traditional literary forms that appeals to you?
Yeah, well, I think first off, you know, non-dominant cultures or identities are always measured against this bias of, you know, so-called traditional standards. So the means of just, you know, existing or having a genuine expression, even creative expression of, you know, a person that comes from a non-dominant culture is seen as experimenting or subverting, where in a sense, it's just a sort of existence. So part of my, you know, so-called subversion is just truthfully, you know, existing in the way that I sense, you know, the world and myself in it. The other part is I think every writer has like a specific devotion in their writing that they sort of lead with. And my devotion is to the underworld of language, to sort of, you know, what's going on underneath. I mean, sometimes I refer to it as hell, but this, you know, amoral hell, like, you know, a writer has to go to hell to write. And also in this sort of, you know, the density or the energy of language, where like Kandinsky kind of put this spiritual system that was associated with colors and lines and within composition and art. And I think a lot about that also, you know, having a background in physical theater and just like conceiving things more spatially. And I think about Joseph Brodsky and the way that he described poetry and language as, you know, language negating its own mass and the laws of gravity. And I love that he used the word negating, because in a sense, to negate, you know, gravity or density, which is sort of the standard rule by which, you know, humans live, is also to subvert it, but it's not necessarily a political subversion. It's just a means of existing. So that's sort of where my approach that is, I guess, so-called subversive or experimental to fiction and narrative comes from.
This book is set over one evening in Berlin. I love books that are set in a really close time.
Yes.
And space. So I'd love to know what appealed to you about keeping this proximity so close.
Well, kind of jumping off of what I was saying about density, the other three books that I wrote are quite expansive, and they kind of jump around within different realities, even different dimensions. You know, some are happening online, some are happening within a nightmare, and not, you know, all at the same time. So within one book. And this book, I would say, is sort of the most realistic in a sense. And I really wanted to see how dense I can make it and how, you know, just like squeeze it into this, you know, impenetrable like kernel, and for that kernel to be really expansive. And so that's why it's, you know, all of it happens in just one night. They don't move, you know, they barely move, like a thigh shifts, you know, maybe like the chin is lowered. They don't speak. It's completely in silence. And yet it's really expansive because everything between them and their, you know, they never even make contact. But in that like space between them and that longing between them is all of history in a sense.
This feels like the perfect time for us to hear an extract. Please, can you read us some?
Of course. So this, I'm going to read an extract from the beginning, and then I'm going to jump to one that's, you know, more in the middle of the book, because the book itself jumps around a lot. So I think it's gives a good taste of the book. Nadezhda, her hair hangs like milk, like thick, dark milk, her face in profile, her forehead crescent. There's the tip of her nose sticking out from the thickness of her milky hair, on the darkest hour of the darkest day of a Berlin black milk winter. The trees crack in the wind, the puddles catch the black sky, trickle it downstream along the curb and slick the bars of the iron gutter with it. I don't mean to slyly conjure up a prison as if to imply that Nadia and I live in a prison. Nadia and I do not live in a prison. We are free. We know people who live in a prison, people our age who have lived in a prison and go on living in a prison. They are not free. We are here in our bedroom, sitting knee to knee. Nadinka and I like to dance to kitsch Russian techno pop from the 90s. Maybe it's that Gorbachev gap where you could go far with innuendo. I don't know any culture that mixes party time with despair as well as the Slavs. Except, naturally, the Jews. Dancing was a great alternative to sex for Nadia and I. When I'd ask her if she's horny, sometimes she tells me she's been waiting for me to drip into her mouth all day. Though sometimes she answers, no. And if we both feel secure with that, we let it be. And if I hesitate with my expression, she quickly adds, but I'll f*** you good tomorrow. I prefer just the no. I don't want to be f***ed good tomorrow. I want to be honest today. There's a tactic to expansion. You clear the land and repopulate it with your own, like Russia did with the coast by the White Sea, with the Finns and Estonians, or the deportation of the Balkars, Chechens, Ingush, Crimean Tatars, Karachays, the forced settlement programs of Sovietization of the Koryaks, Nenets, Mansi, Sakha, indigenous communities. The name Siberia comes from the Tatar word meaning sleeping land. There was a language to the natural territory. There were shamans, and the earth had a voice. The deer had a voice. The bear had a voice. Children removed from their families. Abduction of community leaders. There were strict laws to civilize the rest. Owning a drum would get you executed. There's this joke, and it goes like this. Nurse, a young man says, where are we going? To the morgue, the nurse answers. But nurse, the young man says, I haven't died yet. Well, the nurse places her palm gently on his shoulder. We haven't arrived yet.
Thank you so much. It's so great to hear this kind of beautiful kind of poetry like prose from your actual voice. I feel very honored. Thank you so much, Elaine.
Thank you.
So you were born in Ukraine, emigrated to Wisconsin, and now you live in Paris. How did the settings and this kind of movement in your life inform your writing?
Yeah, I think, again, as I think a lot of immigrants can relate, there's a lot of contradictory realities, standards, way of understanding the world, way of having hope, way of feeling that we have agency, direction and a place in the world. And I think, you know, these settings of, you know, Soviet Ukraine, and then, and I also used to spend my summers in Israel, where my grandparents had immigrated to, and then, you know, the American Midwest. And then I had my undergrad in the East Coast, and then now, you know, Paris for 17 years. So I think it allows me in my writing, and maybe in my thinking as a thinker as well, a certain dexterity and a certain ability to hold contradictions, and to use those discrepancies to create a universe where there is a sort of that can hold a sort of, I guess, anguish without exploding.
Yeah, absolutely. So queer identity and queer women's bodies are central to a lot of your writing. Can you speak a bit to this?
Yeah, sure. So I think with, you know, otherness in general, and I said before that one of the things that really interests me is sort of the strangeness of having a body and the strangeness of containers in general, because my first novel, The Natashas, touches on also trafficking of women and girls from the East to West. So also, you know, this form of containers. And in my third book, A Door Behind the Door, the narrator, Olga, says the only thing that makes this body bearable is that we can get out of it. And so I think a lot of my characters are sort of philosophers and poets, even though, you know, like Olga, like she's an unemployed secretary. And that's kind of the, you know, she would like to have more ambition, but she can't quite understand where to pull out, you know, this ambition from the world, from herself. And so what I'm most interested is not necessarily to lead with the political echoes of otherness, but the lyrical systems of otherness, the sort of the poetry and the reflections that the body exudes, that, you know, the body exudes beyond itself and within itself. And so I guess it's just giving space for queer identity and queer bodies to exist in this plane that doesn't have to be ruled by, you know, morality or institutional structure, and that can think and move and exist even beyond itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So Yelena, you are appearing on a panel as part of this year's Coasters Queer Festival, which will take place on Sunday the 15th of October at 1 p.m. called Queer Ukraine. Why should people come to this event, and what can they expect?
Oh, well, first of all, I'm so thrilled to attend, and I can't wait to hear what everyone in the panel has to say. What's really exciting is we're going to have the collective from the anthology of Queer Ukraine there, which is a must-read anthology. Please get it. And I think, you know, if as a listener you want to hear more about any of the ideas or curiosities that I've sort of mentioned on this podcast. Also, just to get to know more the experience of, you know, queer people today in Ukraine that have left. You know, I was a refugee of a certain time, which was maybe in a sense a little antiquated compared to today. And even I myself am, you know, interested to get to know what it means to be, you know, in your 20s and your 30s. Queer and growing up with this, you know, openness and this, you know, the vestiges of the Soviet regime, and then, you know, fleeing to the West. So there's a lot of, you know, questions about writing, questions about queerness. If any of that interests you, please come and join us.
Thank you so much for joining us, Yelena. How can people find and follow you?
You can find me on Twitter, where I'm a bit of a ghost, I admit, I'm not always there, but at Yelena Moscovich. I'm a lot more present on Instagram, and it's the same at Yelena Moscovich.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been an honor.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have been thinking a lot about great new queer writers since recording this show, so have chosen a book club book which reflects this. All This Could Be Different by Sarah Thancombe Matthews as our next book club book. This novel is getting rave reviews over in the USA, so I thought we'd see what the fuss was about. Here is the blurb. Graduating into a recession, Senna tries on adulthood like an ill-fitting suit. Moving to a new city, she embraces all that it has to offer. Friends that feel like family, gay bars, house parties, and new romances. But when painful secrets rear their heads, corporate jobs go off the rails, and evictions loom, Senna and her community find themselves looking for a new way to live. All of This Could Be Different is a novel about being young in the 21st century, about work, precarity, distant parents, about family, activism, queer love, sex and hope, about knowing that all of this could be different. Here is a clip from the opening of the book to whet your appetite.
I would like to tell a story of a different time. I was 22, a teak switch of a girl. I had finished college. There were not many jobs. The economy had punctured like a tire. Obama had won a second term. He said jobs, healthcare, national healing. He said Trayvon Martin could have been my son. I was moved by this, thought that sort of imaginative exercise bravery. I would listen to his speeches on NPR as I dressed for work. I had found a job. This set me apart from my college friends. I was a consultant, or going to be. This despite my arty degree. A consultant in training. Three toddlers hiding in a suit. I did not consider myself a sellout. What I felt was that I had been saved from drowning. My classmates without jobs had moved in with their parents, were working unpaid internships at noble nonprofits. I wished them well. My parents were not with me, had left me to make my way in the new country. I was glad they did not, for now, need me to send them money. They had before. My client was a baobab of a corporation. Fortune 500. They made car seats, heating units, pedometers, batteries. My boss demanded I wear pantyhose. You are a contractor, he told me. No benefits. Women who work for me wear makeup. That is how it is. My men wear suits. You must dress better than the clients, always. That is how they know we work for them. We get the client to their definition of success.
And thank you for listening. We will be back next month. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can contact us at btnbookclub@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at btnbookclub. We are always on the lookout for new sponsors and great organisations to partner up with. So if this appeals to you, please do get in touch. And if you want to show the Brighton Book Club some love, which is all recorded on a voluntary basis for the love of books and people who love books, you can send a donation to help keep us on air at Radio Reverb and on your podcast platforms at radioreverb.com/donate. See you next month.